Welcome to The Right Chamber,
the podcast where we dive deep into the fascinating world of medicine and healthcare.
In every episode, we will talk about pivotal topics relating to medicine and surgery in the UK and what it's like to be a healthcare professional today. We are inviting doctors and other healthcare professionals across different specialties to discuss their experiences and give an insight into what their journey has been like. Please follow us on Instagram and TikTok at RGUCMS and subscribe to our YouTube channel, RGUC Media. So sit back, ignore the traffic, and enjoy the Right Chamber podcast.
Jill Faulkner is the Associate Director of Patient Experience. She manages the complaints and patient advice and liaison service at both Dudley and Sandwell and West Birmingham. She also manages the volunteer service and the chaplaincy department in Dudley. As an advanced level accredited mediator, she mediates between staff, patients, families and carers. She also serves as a staff governor committed to enhancing patient care and staff well-being through effective communication and support. Welcome back to the Right Chamber podcast. My name is Jaspreet.
And my name is Victor.
And we'll let our guest introduce herself.
Hi, thank you. My name is Jill Faulkner. I'm the Associate Director of Patient Experience here at the Trust.
Brilliant. Lovely to meet you, Jill.
And Jim.
We have some questions just to find out about your role and just what you do with the Trust. So could you share with us a little bit about your journey into patient experience and give us a take on your current role?
Okay, so I've been in the NHS for 30 years in August. I've worked at Dudley for the past 8 years in July. My role is I look after piles of complaints both at here and Sandwell and MMU. Mm. I also look after the volunteers, the chaplains, and arts and environment here at Dudley.
So it's quite wide, widespread and not kind of localised to Dudley. Okay, interesting.
And like, what does your role, what exactly is your role in the NHS?
Okay, so no 2 days are the same. My role has just changed with Samuel coming on board with us. So I've just kind of let go of patient experience, but I've taken over the powers and complaints over at Samuel and MMU. Every day is different because you don't know what's going to come through the door. So we have, we also look after the compliments and things as well. So it's not always about bad stuff. It's good stuff too. We know our compliments outweigh our complaints and concerns that we have coming through.
And I know you do some things with like mediation as well. Could you just tell us a little bit about that?
Okay, so I'm an advanced level mediator. So I undertake the mediation with our patients and their families, but I also do it for staff as well through HR. Across the Trust. I don't do that at Sandwell yet, but I certainly do it here.
Okay. And so for like our listeners, because this podcast, you know, it's going to be healthcare staff across the hospital, but it's also members of the public. So for someone who doesn't quite understand what the role of a mediator looks like, could you break that down a little bit for...
So mediation is an alternative type of resolution. It's completely voluntary. You know, you can't make somebody do it. And it's about getting people together with a mediator to try and resolve their issues and concerns together. It's not for the mediator to resolve them for them. The mediator just facilitates them talking with each other to get to something agreeable at the end, if possible. People worry about mediation and what it's going to be, but it's not. It's a very calm, safe space for people to speak, and it's confidential as well.
Okay.
So, being a worker of the NHS, how do you like maintain neutrality when you're mediating?
Okay. So, you have to be completely non-judgmental. I only ever mediate people that I don't know. Mm. If I know somebody, then I can't get involved because it's a conflict of interest there. And because I don't know either of those people, I can remain non-judgmental. It's about being non-biased. It's about listening to both sides and ensuring that both parties know that you're actively listening to them and taking on board their concerns. And being empathic without agreeing with them.
Mm. Okay.
Because both sides obviously have got their own story to tell. So, you know, you can't agree with either side.
Do you face like any challenges when you have to, the mediating part of your job? Like, what's the most challenging aspect of it?
I think it's more so with patients rather than staff. Patients, you know, if they've made a complaint, etc., and we're mediating it to try and get to a resolution, they are very upset, they're frustrated, they're angry. So sometimes it can get a little bit out of hand. But with the skills I have, I can normally pull that back and talk it through and get to some kind of resolution. Not always, because some people don't want to get to resolution, but most of the time we can.
Yeah, and it's understandable, you know, it's a tricky environment with staff, the patients, the dynamics of everyone just building that kind of nice atmosphere where the expectations of the patients are met, but and at the same time doctors and nurses and allied health professionals, we're working also in an environment where we are kind of are guided and are safe and protected at the same time. So it's kind of managing around all of that, isn't it? So when a mediation needs to take place, because I'm really glad you mentioned it's confidential. It sounds very kind of relaxed atmosphere. Do you meet in person or is it virtual? Do you have...
So the process is, so let's just say it's a mediation between two people. I've done much bigger groups before as well. What we do is so if it's say between you guys, I'd pull one of you in first and you tell me what you want to tell me. Then the other person would come in and then I get you together with me there. And the first part of that is that you will then re-summarise looking at me what your concerns and issues are. And then what I'll do is I'll get you to talk to each other. And that's how it works. And then everybody has mediation signs a confidentiality agreement that they can't talk about anything outside of the room unless it's agreed with the other party or parties. And then we do an agreement at the end. Sometimes we do it in writing, sometimes we don't. It's completely up to the people participating. And that's about what they want me to tell their managers. If they want me to tell them nothing, I'll tell them nothing. If they want me to tell them that, yes, we've agreed to do such and such, then I'll tell them that. But that is purely on what the participants want and they both have to agree to it.
It sounds like it's a very positive take on just resolving issues. Because I can imagine if you've been called and you have no idea what to expect, you might be a little bit anxious. But really, with how you've described it, it sounds like a really positive way to go about it, and especially having that non-judgmental aspect, seeing them one at a time, but then encouraging communication with everyone. That thing's really amazing.
So let me go back to like the basics. So say a patient has put in a complaint.
Mm-hmm.
What happens? Like, how does the process start?
Okay, so formal complaints in the NHS has got a lot of legislation around it. Every complaint that comes in, I see, and I have a complaints manager that works with me as well, that she sees as well. We decide whether that can, there's different levels to the complaints process. So you've got the PALs, which is your informal. We've got the complaint standards where we can do a quick resolution, and then we have the full process. We decide how that can be managed. We contact the complainant to ask if they're okay with that. Because if it's something about, if somebody wrote in and said, I can't get an appointment with ophthalmology, I want to make a complaint, we can deal with that the same day. So it doesn't need to be a formal complaint. And I mean, it's the patient's or relative's choice. If they want us to complain, then we have to do it. It is their choice. But we can deal with that quickly. So we may put that into a PALS. It was a little bit more than that. And it just needs, say, a telephone call from the division or the matron or something like that. Then we'll get those to call. And then that comes under what's called the complaint standards. If it's a formal complaint, it comes in. We have to acknowledge it within 3 working days. We then send it out. Every complainant is offered either a written response or a local resolution meeting. A local resolution meeting is either myself or one of my team will be in that meeting to facilitate the meeting. I tend to do the more complex ones. And then we have the people that are concerned in the complaint. If it's a lower bands, we don't put those in the meeting. We always have managers and matrons and consultants, etc. In the meeting. Then we meet with the complainant to talk through their concerns and issues. Those meetings are recorded. And then we send up a follow-up letter of a summary. It's not verbatim of that meeting. And we send them a copy of the recording as well. If they want a written response, then obviously we just put everything into a letter. If they remain unhappy, they can come back to us and we'll reopen the complaint and they'll tell us what their concerns are and then we'll reopen it and then we start the process again. If they continue to remain unhappy, the next stage is to go to the Ombudsman, if the Parliamentary Health Service Ombudsman, it goes to those. The Ombudsman will contact us to say such and such a person has contacted them to say that they want us to look at their concerns. We then send the whole file to them. Then they will make a judgment as to whether they're going to investigate it or not. If they're not, then they'll contact us and say, no, we're not investigating this. You've done everything. If they think there's elements that have been missed or need further investigation, then they will then investigate. When they investigate, the outcome is either not upheld, partially upheld, fully upheld. If it's partially or fully upheld, sometimes we get a fine, but the trust gets fined. It's non-legal, though. We get a fine and usually we get... we have to do an action plan that has to be in place within 3 months to ensure whatever it is doesn't happen again. They can go on to a next stage, which is called a judicial review. In all my years, I've only ever known one case go to judicial review, but that's when it starts going to court and barristers and things. So very, very few and far between complaints go to judicial review.
Because for us, it's like if a patient's unhappy, we give them the little form and they're like, here you go. Yeah. And then they wait for things to happen.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But surely, like you said, like you have to sort out the serious complaints and, well, the silly is not a good word to use, but like complaints that are just like, well, I don't really know what do you do. Do you get complaints where you're just like, I really don't know what to do about it. Like, I hate the food of the hospital. Like, do something about it.
I think one of the, I don't know if silly is the right word. I had somebody write in, not at this trust, at a previous trust, whereby he'd come in with his dad to the pain clinic and the pain clinic was running late. So instead of the practitioner taking a lunch break, they decided to make a coffee and have that in the clinic room.
Oh.
And they complained about the aroma of coffee in the clinic room, which we had to respond to. And obviously, we just gave an apology and explained that the clinician hadn't had a lunch break. So that's probably the most... I know if silly is the right word.
Maybe they were allergic to the smell of coffee.
Okay. Everyone has different preferences, right? it's a very structured process. And I appreciate the different levels. So it's kind of at the start, it sounds like the aim is to go towards the least amount of escalation really needed to solve the issue. So at the very start, if it's something that you can just solve very informally, then we can take care of it there and then. Then the next level is the PALS.
So the first level will perhaps be on the ward or within the service. And if they can't resolve, then it comes through to us. So if it's something quite informal, like I can't get an appointment or whatever, we would ask our PALS team to do that.
Ah,
if it's
okay.
A bit more of that of I've rung up, I can't get an appointment and the secretary was rude to me, then that would need to be a phone call from the service to explain it and apologise on behalf of whoever they've spoken to. And then if it's much more complex than that, then we would take it to formal, yes.
Okay. And when there is complaints that come in, is it specifically patients only or do you get staff involvement as well, as in like maybe staff to staff, or is it only patients?
No. So the legislation is about patient care. So patients, relatives with consent, etc., that anybody can make a complaint, that's absolutely fine. We do also deal with organisation to organisation. So if we say an ambulance, say a paramedic, didn't like the way somebody treated somebody when they brought them into hospital, that is counted as an organisation to organisation complaint, but that doesn't fall under legislation. That's completely different.
Do you think most of these complaints could have just been resolved with better communication?
Yes.
Do you have any advice or suggestions on what staff should do to staff should do to improve their communication skills?
Okay, so the main theme for complaints is communication, and it is about that. Talk to your patient, advise them, don't make promises you can't keep. It's about meeting expectations. It's about all of that stuff, because a lot of the complaints come through all say, well, I was promised this, it never happened, nobody updated me on this, you know, they changed my medication but nobody told me. It's all of that kind of stuff that it all boils down to communication. Yes.
Absolutely. And I think even so, in medical education, where I and Jasper work at the moment, it's something we really do try to focus on with the medical student training, because it's so important. I think in some previous podcasts we've talked about soft skills and just how important they are, but yeah, it's that ICE part of your history. Yes. You know, what's your idea of what's going on? What's your concern?
What are your expectations?
What do you expect from the medical team? Because you can treat all the medical condition all you want, you know, or give the medication or whatever. But if it's the patient's concern is something entirely different, and their expectation of the team is entirely different, then if there's an imbalance there and there's missing information, it can cause problems. But yeah, one of my consultants previously had just said, look, just 90% of all the issues you'll face as a doctor is communication errors. So if you can just really drill down and be specific with your communication, and at the same time, just as you said, don't make promises that you can't keep.
But that's hard, because like we have an element of like people pleasing, so you try to say like, yes, we could do this, but like, because if you have a patient who comes in who's very anxious, you try to give them that hope that like, oh, everything will be fine.
Yeah,
something might go wrong, but more likely everything is going to be fine. But in their head, they've just heard everything is going to be fine.
Yeah.
So it's very, very difficult.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is sometimes patients, relatives, carers, etc. do misconstrue what's been said. You know, something said, it's taken a different way, and that's not how maybe the clinician, nurse, or if it might be, meant it. So then we have that. That's when the complaint comes in, and we have that. No, that's not what we said. Some of the more difficult complaints are say in a clinic room, say between a doctor and a patient, the doctor saying one thing, the patient saying another. We can never resolve those because there's nobody else in there.
Yeah.
So those ones are quite difficult.
I think sometimes it's just so much easier to just have a chaperone in the room.
Yeah, this is why it's so important.
So important.
Well, especially if, you know, in sensitive conversations, if you know you're going to have that kind of a conversation, just have a colleague with you, maybe the nurse in charge with you when you see the patient, just so there's more kind of objective opinion, and it's clearer what's happened or what's happening. I'm sure there'll be times where, you know, you hear someone's point of view, then you hear the second person's point of view, and immediately you see where the dissonance is, and you're like, oh, okay, we can talk this through.
When I deliver training, what I always say to people, because people, you know, especially clinicians, etc., you know, people are scared of complaints, of course they are, but what I always say is, what's written on that complaint doesn't mean to say it's true. It's just that patient's perception or the carer's perception. It doesn't mean to say it's true until it's investigated. So I do try and get that across, that yes, it is horrible that you've got a complaint about you, it's not nice, it absolutely isn't, but what you read isn't necessarily true.
Because I assume like anyone who gets that PALS complaint, it just triggers like anxiety.
Of course
in
it
them.
Does.
Yeah.
Of course it does. Yeah. You know, and we could get a lot of people ring us and say, I'm really worried and all the rest of it. And you know, we do try to, we do talk to them about, actually, you know, we haven't done the investigation yet. This is what's written down, but doesn't mean to say it's true.
I have noticed, I used to think that, like, you know, there's a HCA and an allied health professional in clinics just in case they want to examine a patient. But equally important when they're having a communication about their procedures or, you know, breaking bad news or giving them results and making sure that someone's there to witness. So when consultants take you to break bad news or tell them that something's not gone right, you know, the duty of candor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's not because they want us to scribe. They just want someone there to, like, make sure that someone else is listening on the conversation.
I think you also mentioned about involvement with the chaplaincy. Just tell us a little bit about that aspect.
So we have a chaplaincy service here. So it's a very good chaplaincy service. We have a lead chaplain and we have three chaplains and two assistant chaplains, all very lovely people. We serve people of religion and those of none. We cover all religions. We celebrate all of the different celebrations throughout the year with each faith. The chaplains will go out to end-of-life patients, anybody that wants to have prayers, etc. If we don't have the that faith in-house, we have contacts out of the trust that we can call in, like priests and things like that, or Jehovah's Witness, all of those kind of faiths. We have contacts with all those people who want. We do a lot with baby bereavement, and our chaplains do hold the baby bereavement funerals for those mums that have sadly lost their babies, usually through NVF. Yeah. A very wide service.
Yeah, very, very wide service. And it all contributes down to that patient experience being best as it could be, really. I know we have, like, helpers around the hospital as well. I don't know if
volunteers.
They're linked volunteers. I don't know, have they always been around, or is that something that's newly been introduced?
No, they've always been around. So under the volunteer service I manage, we have, I think it's about 400 volunteers we've got at the moment. Pre-COVID, we had a lot more, but we're kind of building those numbers back up again now. So we do have separate chaplaincy volunteers as well. So they are people that are special. Quite a lot of those are actually vicars and things that come in and do volunteering in the hospital, but our other volunteers are those that run around the hospital delivering medical notes, and we've got our volunteer drivers that deliver prescriptions and medication. Wow. They take patients home and all kinds of things. They're an extremely good bunch of people.
Yeah, it's an amazing service. So if you had a magic wand and there's something that you could just change that would improve patient's experience overnight, what would it be?
Make us better communicators.
I think that probably is the key, because everything I do comes back to communication. And I think it is about everybody improving their communication. It is about everybody talking to their patients and relatives, etc., and being open and honest and to meet those expectations.
You said that we're getting a lot more compliments than complaints.
We do get a lot. Yes, we
do. Which is amazing.
How does that feel?
That's great. I mean, I don't see, so we log all the compliments that come in, but we have to rely on the wards and services to send them to us. So, you know, when I go out on the wards, I see lots of them on the wall and, you know, pinned up on the walls and things. So I don't think we actually probably get all of them, but we do get lots and lots. We get hundreds and thousands of compliments.
Because patients always leave, like, you know, cards
and things. And
I assume
awards.
That they, you know, not everything is sent to you.
No. But I think, you know, when you look at compliments, we do get lots and lots of compliments. But when we compare it to complaints, if we look at our patient contacts, we only get 0.007% of patients make a complaint compared to how many contacts that we have. So it's not a huge number.
Mm. So yeah, you just wish that the good things are the louder things, but it always seems it's the bad things that tend to take more presidents, why is there like, so much?
Takes so much longer to resolve. Whereas like if a patient gives you a compliment, you're like, thank you. And then that's it. That's the end of it.
Yeah. Yes, it's true. I mean, that's why like you've probably seen in the know, where we start off in the know with compliments coming through from patients. Because, you know, we've got lots of good stuff to shout about as well in the trust.
It just helps with the team morale and
it does.
Team building, and also encourages you to then do better and do more of those good things.
Absolutely.
Yeah, when you see it highlighted on in the news and newsletters, and yeah.
We should put our students' thank you cards as well, because
just
proves that this is a good teaching hospital. Yeah, we get loads.
I think I know a lot more about about the mediation and patient experience and the services that we offer. And I think that's a lovely positive note to probably bring the podcast to a close.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on today, Jill. It's been lovely to have you on. Thank you, everyone that's been listening. Just as always, feel free to message us if you have any questions or if you're interested in taking part in the podcast. And on that note,
remember to stay connected with us on social media. Follow us on Instagram and TikTok at RGUCMS, and subscribe to our YouTube channel, RGUC Media, for more exclusive content and updates. Thanks for tuning in to the Right Chamber podcast. Until next time.